most people in my life in general up here. They didn't know me pre-accident, and so they only know the Sarah post-accident. And so I just get worried about them essentially judging me of why is she answering slowly or why can she not do this.
This is TBI, Talking Brain Injury, from Brain Injury Association of Colorado. I'm your host, Phil, a four-time recipient of brain injuries I don't even remember, plus a whole bunch I kinda maybe do remember. In this episode, I welcome Sarah Whitmer. She's a Colorado native and voracious world traveler, now living full-time in Alaska.
Alaska just really had a hole in my heart. It has all the great things of Colorado, but kind of even better mountains and oceans. And just kind of felt like a place I needed to be after my injury.
But Alaska's just the latest pin on Sarah's map. She spent years traveling the globe, rafting the Zambezi in Africa, to volunteering in Central America and Southeast Asia. Exploration, she tells me, made her more accepting, more forgiving, more open to experience. It also prepared her for life with an unexpected brain injury.
A brain injury is a very unknown environment, and you have no idea what to expect. Which was just like being in another country. I don't know the language. I have to figure out how to get places I need to get.
A brush with death on the road from Alaska changed her life. It led to a new home, a new career, and a new calling on the one and only Alaska Brain Bus. But first, big news for us here on the TBI podcast. We just made a list of the top 90 shows in Colorado, number 44 from the folks at FeedSpot. Of course, this podcast belongs to you, my loyal listeners, and especially the guests that I welcome from every corner of the brain injury community. It wouldn't happen without you. And another big shout out to the generous support from Brain Injury Association of Colorado, especially Zach. He's been there from the very start. If you want to be on the podcast, reach out. Contact Brain Injury Association of Colorado or message the contact in our podcast notes. Now, let's hear from Sarah. Hey everyone, welcome back. It's Phil, your host on TBI Talking Brain Injury. And today I'm joined by Sarah Whitmer up in Alaska over Zoom. Sarah, great to have you on Zoom.
Thanks.
And tell me, how's the brain bus doing? The Alaska brain bus.
It is good. We are making lots of progress. We have just started kind of introducing the concept of Love Your Brain, which is Kevin Pierce, the Olympic snowboarder, the organization he started. So we're trying to get a training up here to incorporate yoga teachers with it. We are talking about expanding. We've gone to the Kenai Peninsula for quite a few visits now, and we have just made our first trip up to north, up to like Fairbanks and Glen Allen and Talkeetna. So we're hopefully going to come to these communities a lot and then slowly kind of pull back our presence there, because our goal is to make a community able to kind of help themselves and help the people living in that community with brain injuries, because we obviously can't be everywhere all the time. And so we're starting to get to that point on the Kenai. We've had great support and great participation and trainings. So we're starting to kind of pull back from there and then work more north.
All right. Yeah, it's such an Alaska thing to have a bus dropping off brain education all across the state. How did it start?
So Adam Grove is the doctor. That's our executive director. And he got a bus donated to him. I want to say the owner of the bus, his son had a brain injury, if I remember correctly, and donated the bus. And so we had to get it all the way up here from the lower 48 on a barge. We have transformed it and put a lot of work into it. It's kind of an old, quirky bus. But yeah, put a lot of love into it. And now providers can, like when Adam goes to these communities, they can do brain mappings. And so they can do like individual consults with people, but then also just have a presence. And then we also do provider trainings. So that's kind of just how it started with Adam. Also has a brain injury. Two brain injury people connecting and kicking it off.
How did you get involved with the brain bus? How'd you find him?
Yeah, I was seeing a therapist that specialized in TBIs, and I was talking about my passions and how I love helping. I used to be a therapist, and now I work in mental health in another capacity and just love to help people and kind of wanted to take that specifically to the brain injury world. And she was like, oh, Adam Grove does this brain bus thing, and she was actually a board member on it. And so she connected me with Adam and we got talking, and it just kind of worked out that I'm now a board member on it. Julie no longer is on it. She had to kind of step back, which is her workload. But that's how I got introduced to Adam and the Brain Bus.
All right. Small little world up there in the Great White North. You think it's so big, but then, man, you just make all these connections, and it's crazy.
It's very, very small.
That's wild. But it's so cool that you all are bringing the education and the awareness and just these talk. You know, you're bringing just the brain injury community to places that need it.
Absolutely. Because Alaska is one of the highest brain rates in the whole United States. So that's definitely a very big prevalent topic up here.
Doing the good work. Well, now we got to rewind it back to Alaska, because you're from Colorado originally, but you've been up in Alaska how many years now?
Since 2017 was my first summer up here.
All right. So take us all the way back to 2017, how you ended up in Alaska, and then your experience with brain injury, because the two are kind of tied.
They are. I was living in Cosanga, Ecuador. I was volunteering down there for about 6 months, and a previous volunteer had come back to visit. And she asked me what I was doing after my world travels, and I said I had no idea. I just kind of quit my career path, and so I had no idea what I was doing when I come back to the States. And she was like, well, I work in Alaska on tour boats. Have you ever been? I have not. And I was very immersed in the travel bug world. So she was like, you should come up and work. Well, that's like more new places of traveling, but I'm also then making money, not just spending money. So I interviewed with the company that she worked for, which was Kenai Fjords Tours, and got hired on and finished my world travels. I went over to Southeast Asia for 3 or 4 months. And then came back to the States and said hi and goodbye to my parents. And then drove up here to Alaska and instantly fell in love with this state. My goodness, it's especially in the summers, it is very hard not to love. And it was after that first summer that I was driving back home to my parents' house in Colorado. And I got in my car accident. I was in Cheyenne, Wyoming. So I was 40-ish miles north of Fort Collins, and I hit black ice and rode the guardrail for a mile or two, and then when that ended, flipped my car multiple times. And I was in a coma for 12 days in the hospital at Cheyenne Regional. I broke my neck, and there was lots of talk, and my mom wanted me to go to Craig Hospital down in Colorado because she knows how great that is for brain injuries and recovery. But the doctors up there said I was absolutely in no way, shape, or form able to be transferred. So I stayed up there and then did my rehab in northern Colorado or Greeley. So I was there for a long period of time and then got released back to my parents' house in Fort Collins and was there until March. And I am not a person that can sit still and do nothing. And so I felt kind of worthless having to just be dependent on other people and not being able to do much for myself. And so I called the boat company that I worked for up in Seward and asked them if they would have me back. And I said I didn't know how it was going to go because I used to never get car sick and now I couldn't ride in a car. So the thought of being on an ocean sounded horrible. And they were great. They were very supportive through my whole accident. And he said, come up, go out on the boat for free for a week. If it works out and you can handle it, you stay and you work. And if it doesn't, you go back home to Colorado and figure something else out. So I came back up that next summer, worked on the boats. I never felt awesome, but, I'm way too determined to go back home. So I kind of pushed through, and if I kept myself busy and just didn't focus on how miserable I felt, I did okay. And like I said, Alaska just really had a pull on my heart. It has all the great things of Colorado, but kind of even better mountains and oceans. And it just kind of felt like a place I needed to be after my injury. So then I kind of made, after that summer, I made Alaska permanent and moved up here for good. So technically the fall of 2018.
All right. And been up there ever since. And you wrote a book about it all. not just Alaska and the accident and your injury and what's happened since then, but going all the way back to when you were a kid. Now, as you were putting your book together, as you were detailing, you know, all these experiences, talk about, well, world travel. Because not only does Alaska have a place in your heart, it seems like world travel does. You were bopping all around the world before you ended up in Alaska and really found a home. But, you know, talk about like that travel bug.
Yeah. My first real trip out of the country, I was in college it was then Mesa State in Grand Junction, Colorado. Their outdoor program did a big world trip every year. And I kind of was late to the game and hearing about it. They were going to Africa that Christmas break. So I emailed the professor and I asked, I was like, oh, like this year is probably a little late, but can I go next year? And he was like, well, we never go to the same place twice. So if you want to go to Africa, let's make it happen. And things kind of just fell together. And that was the first time I really left the country. We went to 6 countries in Africa. We were there for 6 weeks. And he was great because he kind of took a back seat and let us figure stuff out. I almost got myself arrested at an airport in South Africa. And he kind of just let it happen. And afterwards, when we were debriefing about it, he's like, I mean, now you'll never do that again. You know, it's bad.
Well, what did you do? What happened? How'd you almost get arrested?
We were in taxis going to the airport. And I was being a classic tourist and taking pictures of just the scenery in the area. Mm-hmm. And one of the guards came up and said, well, why were you taking pictures? And I said, the cab driver was like, you shouldn't be taking pictures. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, you should delete those. I deleted them off my camera. And the security guard came up to me, police officer. He's asking me what I was doing. And I said, I was taking pictures. I'm really sorry. And he said, well, let me see him. And I said, I actually deleted them. And he's like, no, you didn't. And so he searched my whole camera. He went through like all the pictures in it and they wouldn't believe me that I deleted them. And I was getting very nervous. It was very heated. And my professor was in the taxi cab ahead of us. And, you know, finally the cab driver kind of had my back. He's like, I did tell her to delete them. And he just said, okay, it's like, I don't want to see your camera out again until you get on the plane and you're gone. I was like, okay, I'm really sorry.
Man, and we thought TSA was hard on. Like those guys, wow.
Right? Nothing like an AK-47 staring you in the face while you're getting questioned about a camera.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not doing nothing.
Right? I'm so sorry. I'm just like a dumb white tourist.
I am not CIA.
No. Sure,
wow.
Not.
Wild. But yeah, like, and I mean, that was your first taste of world travel, but it didn't scare you off from it because, I mean, I guess the benefits of seeing the world far outweighed kind of those unknowns of, you know,
yeah,
etiquette in really other countries.
Did. And that first trip to Africa, I mean, Africa is an amazing continent. Just the beauty and the happiness of the people really just kind of just sunk that travel bug talons into me. And ever since then, I have definitely made it a mission to get out as much as I can and I thoroughly enjoy helping people. So I've kind of also made that a part of all my trips in Africa. We spent Christmas at an orphanage, like I said, in Ecuador. I volunteered. We taught English as a second language and sustainable living. So really just trying to immerse myself in communities and help people. And then I've been to Southeast Asia where I did the same thing, did a lot of helping projects over there, in Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, Thailand. And I just never want to lose that fire. And I think it taught me a lot leading up to the brain injury of just kind of grit and being in a very unknown environment, because a brain injury is a very unknown environment and you have no idea what to expect. Which was just like being in another country. I don't know the language. I have to figure out how to get places I need to get or money transactions. And I think, you know, at the time, I didn't think that. But looking back on it, I think it really kind of prepared me for just handling the unknown as it comes and taking everything with a grain of salt and as it comes and working through it to get where I want to be.
I like that perspective, and it makes me wonder. So, since your brain injury, has travel been more difficult, or, you know, how do you manage travel? You know, have you done much world travel since then?
Yeah. Ooh, travel is a lot different. I have, since my brain injury, I spent 2 weeks in Tahiti. And then went with a girlfriend, quite a few girlfriends, down to Patagonia. So we were in Argentina and Chile for a while. We popped over to see Iguazu Falls in on the Brazil side. So that was a big, long, 2 week trip. And then this year we just went to Canada. So definitely a huge part of my life still. But definitely way more difficult. Even just the planning all the pieces is very difficult. And after kind of my trips traveling alone, I've learned to kind of be more fly by the seat of my pants and not have every detail outlined. But obviously some big things you kind of have to have outlined. But it's just much harder for me to do that. And so luckily on these last handful of big trips I've done, I've had other people also involved and they can really help with that. So I don't know how planning a big world trip by myself would go. That definitely makes me nervous if I were to be doing a big world trip by myself and not at least with one other person. Because it is, it's just very different and my brain gets overwhelmed at times and can't process things as fast as sometimes it needs to, like when I'm being questioned by a security guard in another country.
Yeah.
That it just can't keep up.
Yeah, and I get that too. You know, I think planning just in general for people that have suffered TBI can be daunting or sometimes just feel just outright exhausting. But I think you found a good tactic for it, you know, like traveling solo, it's got its own perks, but there's no shame in leaning on a friend or leaning on a group of friends when you're out traveling the world and, you know, and, you know, hopefully they can handle some of the planning or they can take, you know, some of that, daunting work off your plate to make sure that you're actually enjoying the travel too, right? Not just like flying by the seat of your pants and feeling like you're, struggling the whole way through.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I always feel in life that moments are better when shared. So obviously it helps to have people plan those things and help me navigate, but also that, you know, a view from the top of Table Mountain in South Africa looks a lot better when you're standing next to someone who you can reflect back on that memory with months and years later, versus standing up there staring at it by yourself.
So amen to that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. So you found some ways to make world travel still doable and enjoyable, even after injury.
Absolutely.
Any big trips coming up soon?
I haven't yet planned the big one for 2025. I always try to go on one good big one a year and haven't quite started thinking about 2025. There's too many countries I want to see still. So lots of options.
Always plenty of options. And if you got the dedication to make it happen, it's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Taking it back then to the injury and change after injury, because, well, I've had the chance to read your book. I'm actually helping you a little bit with revising the book and, you know, really finding like your story through all of that you've been through. And one of the big pieces of your story, I think, is change. Changes that have been good and changes that have also been bad since the injury. So let's talk about some of those things that you've noticed have changed the most, and not just like, you know, your physical location from Colorado to Alaska, but, you know, the way that you see the world, interact with people, all that stuff.
As I said, I've always been like a very helping person, and try to have patience with a lot of people, but I would say now to like interacting with people, I give them kind of more grace, because we don't know people's stories. You know, if anyone looks at me, they would not think that I at one point was severely injured and unable to do a lot. And now there's definitely still things I cannot do. So whether it's a clerk at the grocery store or a person that, you know, counting out your change or whatever and taking a long time, like, I don't know, like maybe they have a brain injury and they're learning how to count for the first time after, because that I've been there and I had to learn how to redo math. And so giving people more grace in life is one thing, again, that I've always tried to do, but it just do it better now. And I've always found gratitude and stuff, but I will pull to the side of the road in Alaska and take pictures of moose or take pictures of sunrises and sunsets. I thought sunrises and sunsets in Colorado were out of this world, and they have nothing on Alaska sunrises and sunsets in the winter. They are truly breathtaking. So yeah, I mean, stopping to just appreciate the beauty. You're at the top of a mountain after a hike, just kind of sitting there and really taking in the fact that I can still do this. And we live in a great world that should be explored. But then, you know, there's also the bad changes where my memory is not super great. And my coworker knows my situation. And so I have sticky notes all over the place to remind me to do stuff. And I know it drives her insane and she hates it, but she knows that that helps me be great at my job. So she puts up with it and deals with it. Yeah, high stakes conversations are also a really difficult one for me to have, especially I've had to deal with dozens and dozens of doctors and in doctor visits when they're spewing information at me, my brain can't keep up with it and it's just kind of taking it all in. And I don't ask questions because I just am too overloaded. And then when I leave, I'm like, wait, like I have this question, this question, this question. And then when I have time to process it and actually focus on what I heard, all these questions come back when that maybe in the appointment, I was like, oh yeah, no, I don't have any questions. Like, that's fine. So that's been a big one. That's very frustrating just because a lot of the doctors the doctors do not have brain injuries. A lot of doctors that work with people with brain injuries are just not great from my experiences. The few that I found that are great are wonderful, but it took a lot of searching to find them. But just how they listen more and they talk, so I guess slower maybe to me, or kind of pause and let me have a chance to catch up and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Is hugely important.
Well, and I mean, that speaks to me, the high stakes conversation thing. At times, especially, you know, at work when things are just hectic and, I feel like, God, I wish I could slow this down right now, but literally you cannot slow it down because it's just kind of the way that my work runs. You know, I work at a radio station. And so like the clock is your master. When it's 11 o'clock, the 11 o'clock stuff has to happen. When
you're
it's
on.
Noon, the noon stuff has to happen. There's no slowing down. There's no saying, oh, you know, give me 2 minutes. And sometimes, you know, that can be, especially when I first started this job, I didn't do radio before my brain injury. All I know of radio is post brain injury.
Interesting.
And when I started, it was sometimes very intimidating to know that I've got one chance to get this right and I better do it right. And I also had issues with like kind of mumble mouth, you know, just, you know, that post brain injury is slurring through some words or not pronouncing things right, or seeing words on like, you know, like my news script that I had to read and jumbling them up, stuff that stuff I never did before. Suddenly I was now broadcast to the entire county making these mistakes and thinking like, oh God, I'm going to get fired tomorrow. I know I am. Cause you got to be on the job. Luckily they didn't fire me. And I think that actually sometimes the high stakes and the constant day to day being forced to read and consider what I was saying and how I was saying it, it's actually, I believe, helped with recovery in ways that I can't even like quantify right now. I don't know. It's weird how sometimes being in those uncomfortable situations can actually be a benefit if you allow yourself to sit there in the uncomfortable situation and, you know, learn from it instead of just thinking, this is uncomfortable. I don't want to do this. I can't do this. And letting it, you know, just kind of eat away at you. If you turn it on its head, at least for me, I found that it helped.
No, I agree. And I think part of what was hard for me is kind of sitting in those uncomfortable conversations or not having much to say because my brain can't keep up how the other person is viewing me and caring about that. Because most people in my life in general up here, they didn't know me pre-accident until they only know the Sarah post-accident. And so I just get worried about them essentially judging me of why is she answering slowly or why can she not do this? And I think if we can let that go and sit in those uncomfortable conversations and take our time or whatever we need to do, I agree. I think you really can learn a lot and it will get better over time. Obviously, it's probably not going to be what it was pre-accident, but it will definitely get better. So that is something I've kind of had to learn to do because I used to be, not to toot my own horn, pretty unstoppable in whether, you know, it was academics, sports in college, doing all the things at once and having a ton on my plate and not getting overwhelmed and caring what people thought and just that I did a great job. And so I was always kind of looked up to. So that was a very hard thing for me to sit with and learn. But I think it is a lesson that's good to learn. Easier to say now than at the time, but I do think it is a good lesson to learn.
Yeah. And I mean, that's like everything, right? Is that time really does help to heal. Time also can amplify some of these things. And I get what you're saying about that conversations and feeling like I am just lagging behind or maybe not giving somebody a full enough answer. Or I've got the bad habit of hours later. It's not like I've even been like obsessed with what we talked about. But hours later, I'll be hit with like, gosh, yeah, I should have said that.
That's what I actually meant,
you know, and it's too late at that point.
Yep.
So that's actually one thing I've been working on lately is like, all right, so how do I make peace with those late thoughts or the A plus response that hits me at the C plus time, you know?
Yep.
It's been tough. And actually one way that I've been trying to think about it, you mentioned yoga earlier. I've been doing yoga now I started before my injury, but I started really getting into it after the injury just cause you know, it's a nice calming, activity. Plus, I mean, I've never been flexible, so it's kind of cool to actually touch my toes these days.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a big win. I could still do it. One thing I've been thinking about lately is that, it sometimes feels like I live in a state of perpetual zen where I am like, I am forced to be in the moment because my memory is such dog shit.
Yep.
and you know, I know that that's not exactly what zen is all about, but I'm trying to find, you know, some silver lining to the fact that my memory and also my, you know, my active in the moment response is not where I want it to be. But yeah, just trying to, I don't know, you know, living in the moment is cool until you cannot remember what happened, you know, 5 years ago, or you cannot remember the people that you met 2 weeks ago. And that's probably the thing I struggle with most, memory. You know, I wish that I were better at hanging on to some of those memories. And that's what I loved what you said about, you know, when you go and stand on top of a mountain or a waterfall or whatever, God, have somebody with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's great to be able to go back and talk about that moment with someone. It's easier to keep it alive. And I've also, as of late, Shutterfly is 100% probably running because of me. After every big trip we go on or whatever, I make a one of their Shutterfly books. So I have the pictures to go back and look at because, yeah, months or years later, I will not remember the awesome things I saw or the random kid I met on the side of the road and had a conversation with or gave you know, a trinket too for my backpack. And I can go back and kind of look at those and relive them. Because like you said, my memory is dog shit at times, and I don't want to ever forget those experiences. But unfortunately, now I often do. So that's a little way that I can kind of hang on to them for longer.
Yeah, right on. And no security guards with AKs on Shutterfly. So those photos are yours to keep.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, tell me now about what you're doing in Alaska these days, and the career that you kind of have been forced to give up, because I think that's another big change, something that you might still be working through.
Yeah. I now currently am a TMS technician, which stands for transcranial magnetic stimulation. So it's a treatment for treatment-resistant depression and OCD, and it's for a couple other things, which is amazing, and I absolutely love my job. It allows me to still help people, because that is kind of where my heart lies. But before the accident, I was a therapist, and I think I'd be doing my clients a disservice if I went back to that, just because of, you know, memory issues and processing issues and some of the things that I still struggle with. I don't think I would be able to be a great therapist, but I still have that desire to help people. So TMS is a great way that I can reach that. And I have my patients for 9 weeks at a time, so I get to build a great relationship with them while I have them. So it is a very rewarding job, but I've also kind of found it because my whole life I kind of had the itch in the back of my brain that I wanted to be a police officer. And, you know, every teenager in America hates the cops, especially as you get older and you're probably doing more illegal things. And so I kind of stifled that and was like, oh, like, I don't really want to be a cop. No one likes them. And so just kind of shoved it and pushed it down and down. And after that first summer working in Alaska and traveling and just doing things that I truly liked and enjoyed, I had kind of put my mind to, I'm going to pursue law enforcement. And so when I got back to Colorado, I was going to apply to police academies, kind of with the end goal of being a detective. I would, in a perfect world, love to work up to being a homicide detective. Helping people in a very different way. But that was kind of, I think, my deep-seated passion. And after the accident, that was definitely kind of taken from me, which was a very hard thing to sit with, because I had the option for years and years before and just never taken it. And now once I wanted to take it, I couldn't take it. I have balance issues. Both of my hands are still numb on part of them. So holding a gun and even typing and doing reports and all that, and my memory with, if I get put on the witness stand and they ask me a question and I can't remember something from 3 weeks ago or a month ago or 6 months ago when the crime happened, terrifies me. And then I'm an uncredible witness. And a lot of people don't see that. When I talk, the few people that I know that kind of knew I wanted to go with this route, and like, oh my gosh, like, no, like, you are doing phenomenally. Like, you could absolutely still pursue that career. Oh man, that just makes it like just horrible all over again, because, and other people without brain injuries don't know, but like, I hide so much of my daily struggles from the rest of the world. Because I don't want them to see them, because I'm self-conscious about them or whatever. But so it was just very hard. Like, I know myself, and I know that I would not be able to do that job to the best of the abilities that you need to as a law officer / detective. So that was very hard for me to kind of come to. And like you said, I don't know if I've quite grasped that and really am okay with it, but I'm working at it every day.
And sometimes that's all we can do. We got to roll with the punches, go through some things that people do not see, but also we struggle with ourselves, you know, trying to, well, be as normal as possible with something that people cannot see, because I think that is by far the toughest part of a brain injury for most folks, is that, you know, you don't have a broken leg, you're not missing an arm. It's not something people can see. And so introducing that conversation of, hey, this might be why I'm a little bit behind today, or this might be, you know, why I'm not keeping up with this conversation, or, hey, doc, can you repeat that? Because, man, if there is one thing that is just frustrating, I know for a lot of especially new TBI patients, it's trying to navigate the medical system and care and what's going to be best for you while dealing with the fact your brain is not firing at 100%.
Yep.
I mean, did you have any experience with that in the, you know, the weeks, the months even after your incident, trying to navigate and make sense?
Yeah. You know, and I left Colorado, well, probably 6 months after my accident, which is so wild to think about that I moved back to Alaska 8 months after I was in a coma. But I think I was just kind of too fresh in my injury and recovery. Because as you know, I mean, Colorado, their research and opportunities and professionals there for brain injuries is probably, I would say, maybe top in the country. And so at the time I didn't feel that, but I think I maybe knew some of those resources were there. But again, I had a brain that just couldn't comprehend that or plan that or wasn't ready necessarily to do some of those things until after I came up to Alaska. And so then it was navigating brain injuries and providers up in a state that they're very, very prevalent. My goodness, they are very prevalent, but a lot of the doctors seem to just not get it. So in that sense, I was very sad to leave Colorado because I think I could have gotten, obviously still very frustrating to navigate that system, but potentially a lot more help and ease, just ease of finding providers that are a bit more in tune with it than I have up here in Alaska. Like I said, I have found a few great ones. It has taken years and years, but I have found a couple great ones that I definitely kind of hang on to very tight.
Yeah.
To help me with stuff.
Would you do it different if you could do it again?
Oh man, Phil, that's a question.
Loaded, I know.
I think that's kind of comes back to like this Phil struggling with not being able to do a career I wanted to do and you know, some of the things that it took from me that I don't I am coming to grips with. I live a life that I'm very happy with now. I get to do a lot of the things that I love doing. Nature and outdoors is a huge part of my life. And so I'm very happy with the life that I have. And I'm trying not to focus on how different that life could have been that I would have equally loved, if not more. So can the jury be out on that one?
Absolutely. Because that's okay. Where I'm at too. I mean, I look back on what I did in the weeks and months after my worst injury, and I'm going on 10 years, since, you know, I ran into a tree snowboarding and spent some time in the hospital with all sorts of broken bones and a busted head. I think the jury's also out on if I would do it differently. One thing that I wish I would have done more of, though, was I really do wish I would have maybe advocated for myself and my head more than I did, or found more answers, because I got lulled into, you know, I was so caught up in physical recovery, you know, mending the broken arm, broken leg, busted ankle, all these other things that I had, that I don't think I gave enough attention to my head until maybe years down the road. And it's one of those things where, you know, is it too late now? Not at all. especially after I've had the chance to talk to people like you and nurses and other experts on the podcast, so many great avenues that I can pursue and things that I've started to pursue to, you know, kind of understand a little bit more of like, all right, so where exactly is my head at now? You know, what's going on with it? So, you know, sure, maybe I could have gone back and advocated for myself a little bit more right at the start, but I'm getting there now. And it's like everything, you know, instead of being 2 hours late to my great response to a conversation, I'm now 10 years late to a great response to my brain injury, but I'm getting there, I guess, at least.
Right. Yeah. You got the silver linings. Yeah. I mean, it is hard, you know, when you're like, I should have advocated more for myself. Like, yes, but you also had a brain that didn't know how to do anything at that point. So it's like, how do we expect anyone and ourselves to know the reach of that injury and how kind of all the areas it's going to affect? Again, like you said, we can't see it. You can see a broken leg, you can see a broken wrist or ribs. But we just don't pay attention to the brain that we can't see and that all things that it affects, because my goodness, it affects every single part of us.
Yeah, it all comes back to the brain. And that's why, you know, what you all are doing with the Brain Bus, such a cool initiative up there. But you got your own thing going on too. I recently got some swag from you, some TBI swag, including a mug that says, yeah, I got a brain injury. What's your excuse? I love that.
Right. Just kind of my side project. It's the Sarah Story. So I have an Etsy store and I sell photography on there because nature has always been a big part of my life. But after the brain injury, getting back out in nature and capturing some of just the incredible moments in nature really helped me recover and just kind of find that inner peace that I lost a little bit after the accident. But then also, again, just raising awareness about brain injuries and, you know, t-shirts and coffee mugs and just to get people aware and noticing it. And I've had some chance to do events up here where I was selling my photography, and actually most of the wonderful conversations I had with people as they walked past my booth was about brain injuries. And people are like, oh, like I have a brain injury. I talked to a guy that's like, I was actually supposed to come to Alaska 2 years ago on a big trip and I got a brain injury and I couldn't, and I'm here now. And it was, oh my God, I didn't even like tear up, think about it.
That's too cool.
Yeah, it was just a great experience. I gave him a t-shirt and I said, oh my gosh, like you're doing great things. And I gave him a bunch of resources that, you know, I said some are specific to Alaska, but other ones are just great resources in general to help you kind of on your recovery. But making those connections through my artwork and t-shirts and TBI swag is kind of what my purpose is. I'm not going to get rich doing it, that's for sure. But just to connect people, which is a huge part of the brain injury community and kind of what we're doing with the Brain Bus, is just connecting people and having people to talk to about it. And maybe you've tried one thing and then they try a different thing and you try that and you're like, oh my gosh, like that really helped me and that worked for me. Because we don't know what to try and what not to try, because no one has a blueprint of how to deal with the brain injury.
Yeah, there's no trail map, roadmap for this thing. And it really is easy to feel alone, to feel lost,
absolutely,
to feel just like there is nobody else in the world because of that invisible injury factor. But yeah, like that guy that you met, we're not alone. The community's out there. The community is what you, it's there and it's waiting for you. So I think that's one of the coolest parts. And then like, you know, not only your store, what was it called again? The Sarah Story?
The Sarah Story.
All right. On Etsy, right?
Yep. On Etsy.
Yeah. Like the store and then also the work you guys are doing with Brain Bus. And then also your book. I mean, there's so many survivors I know that are just dedicated to putting their story down on paper. And whether 10 people read it or 10,000 people read it, doesn't matter, because it's just, it's all about getting the story down. And I think one of the most powerful things about writing the story is, you know, it gives you a chance to sit back and recapture maybe those memories you thought you had lost. Do you feel like sometimes that was what happened while writing?
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, it's a great way to kind of capture memories, but also, like, a lot of my processing about my injury and kind of the whole process over 7 years, I made great strides and kind of acceptance and just processing it and dealing with it through the course of writing the book. So it was as helpful to me as hopefully it will be to 10 or 20 or 100 people that read the book when it gets out there. But yes, it was equally as helpful for me as hopefully it will be for other people.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot now, Sarah. Do you have a title?
Oh my God. For those of you listening, Phil has been wonderful in kind of helping me with this. And originally it was called A Beautiful Mess because it's the beautiful mess that my life has become since my injury. So I now celebrate a day. It's called my Alive Day. Every October 2nd, I do something great and epic and awesome because I'm still alive to do it. So that was the day that I got my accident and I could have, should have died. And so his suggestion was maybe my Alive Day, or I used to call it when I was a little more pessimistic on my accident, my almost death day. And I think I am leaning towards either keeping it or my almost death day.
Still, all right.
They're still both very close.
Yeah. And I mean, it's been so much fun to help you kind of, fine tune the memoir and, especially that concept of your Alive Day, your almost death day, because to me that just speaks to so much of what people who have gone through any sort of injury can deal with. It is, you know, on one side, it really did change your life. It can feel like a part of you died. But on the other side, I mean, your story is a prime example of, rolling with the punches, still following what you need to do, what you can do, and what you want to do in life, and just still living it to the fullest. And that's your Alive Day.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a very unfortunate thing to happen, but it's not going to take my life from me. And I'm still alive to do all the great, awesome things that I loved to do before. And now they're just even more awesome.
Right on, Sarah. I love it. Well, great talking with you, having you here on the TBI podcast, and cannot wait to see more of what the Brain Bus is going to do, what you're going to be doing on the Sarah story. I got to go check out that store right now and see what you've been seeing up there in Alaska. I mean, one last thing then. I just got to ask you, of all the things that you've photographed, which one stands out in mind right now as like the coolest thing that you caught and how you caught it?
My gosh. That's a tough one. Of the photographs that I'm selling, I have a couple really cool puffin ones, which is a bird that's up here in Alaska, that they're very simple photos, which I think kind of gets at a brain injury too, of just focusing on like the simple things. Like, it's not a crazy, amazing photograph of this epic view or whatever. It is literally like the head of a puffin kind of close up. Mm-hmm. But just focusing on the simple beauty that we can find in life. Yeah, I would say the horned puffin shot.
All right. And like, you know, it reminds me a little of... I used to take a lot more photos than I do now. I worked at a newspaper before the radio station. But I was up climbing a mountain, miserable day to be climbing a mountain, foggy, rainy. It felt like Alaska, actually.
Perfect.
Foggy, rainy, cold, socked in. But we come around a corner. There's a ton of mountain goats just sitting there chowing down. And I managed to catch a photo of a goat kind of mid-cud. He was chewing and had a tongue stuck out. So I've got a great staring dead on with a mountain goat, basically doing his like to the camera. And like you said, simple photo, nothing special about it except for that goats are kind of jerks too.
And he captured that in that photo.
Goat's got a sense of humor too. Yeah, exactly.
Sure get does. That, get That's that my attitude.
Camera out of my face, guy. Well, Sarah, great talking to you.
Thank you, Phil.
And one last time, if people want to learn more about the Brain Bus, where can they go to find out about it?
So it's the alaskabrainbus.com. We also are Alaska Brain Injury Consortium. So ABIC is another one that we are tied to, but alaskabrainbus.com.
Go check it out now.
Thanks, Phil.